We got coach hirings to talk about real quick. John Harbaugh to the Chargers, Brian Callahan to the Titans, Dave Canales to the Carolina Panthers. But more importantly, we preview everything you need to know for the AFC and NFC championship games. Can the Chiefs establish a run game against the Baltimore Ravens? Can Lamar excel out of 12 personnel? Jared Goff, is there a mismatch over the middle of the field? And what are the Lions going to do to stop Brock Purdy in man coverage? All that and more coming up on the championship round preview show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, January 25th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Dalton Del Don. Dalton, what's going on, buddy?
Before we talk ball, Harmon, I gave you my favorite TV picks last week. This week, I tweeted out my favorite movies of the year. So if you're into movies, there's some obvious picks. There's some not so obvious picks there. So check out my tweet there. Poor Things is the movie I love the most this year. I did not expect to like it as much as I did. Funniest movie of the year by far. Producer Colin kind of giving me a hard time that I didn't have Barbie on there. Greta Gerwig's good. It's a good movie, just not my thing. I thought Poor Things just did a way better job at the same subject. So highly recommend that one. And yeah, Harmon, enough of the movie talk. Do you have any thoughts on that? I know you're more of a TV guy, you said.
I am looking at your movies list and
I haven't seen any of them, actually.
Anyway,
it was an awesome year for movies. And some of those are just you know, coming out of the theater. But it actually was an awesome year for movies. And the Oscar Award nominations just came out. So check that out if you're into films.
I do want to go. I will not go see, obviously, at this point, but I want to see Oppenheimer. That's something I know I would enjoy. I just didn't get around to it during the football season.
It's my favorite Christopher Nolan movie. I know it's blasphemy to some Dark Knight fans, but it was number one all year until I saw Poor Things. Absolutely see Oppenheimer. Totally. 3 hours of dialogue, yet to me it flew by. I thought it was really well done.
I don't mind 3 hours of dialogue. We are not going to have 3 hours of dialogue on this show, Dalton, but we do have a lot to talk about. We're going to preview the AFC and NFC championship games, obviously. Two incredible games that I can't wait to talk about. But I do want to just run through some coaching news that's happened since we haven't addressed on the podcast. Now, we're going to do a full episode after the Super Bowl, breaking down all of the new head coaches, new offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, and their impact on their new team. But we have had three head coaching hires. We had a piece of breaking news literally right as we were starting to record this podcast. Adam Schefter reported that Dave Canales has been offered the Carolina Panthers head coaching job, and he is taking that job. Brian Callahan agreed to be the Titans head coach earlier this week. And Jim Harbaugh last night, the big fish, the big one, agreed to be the Chargers head coach. So, Dalton, I'll throw those three at you and, you know, just any reactions to any of those three, especially obviously Jim Harbaugh is the big one.
Yeah, Harbaugh wins wherever he goes. He may not last a long time, but the NFL to me is a better place with him in it. It should be entertaining if nothing else. So happy that Harbaugh's back in the NFL. It should be good news for Herbert and a decent landing spot there. Don't have any opinion of Canales to the Panthers. I'm curious yours. Callahan, correct me if I'm wrong, but was he not even calling? Well, he wasn't the play caller in Cincinnati. So I always question that leap there. But I don't have any strong takes other than I'm happy Captain Comeback is back in the league.
I think the Jim Harbaugh, Justin Herbert connection has the potential to be electric, not just obviously because I think what they can do on the field together. Of course, Justin Herbert's super talented quarterback. No question. That's exciting. I am interested to see how their two personalities mesh, because I could not picture two different people, just how they operate and the way. I mean, I think Herbert has grown a lot because he's a young guy and he's growing in the league before our very eyes. I think he's grown as a vocal leader. That's great. I think he's just typically not the most, he's a little bit of an introvert is what I would say, you know, spending time with him and just knowing people that know him, that whole thing. A little bit of an introvert. He's had to be kind of coaxed out of his shell to be a vocal leader. And if you're familiar with Jim Harbaugh, he's anything but an introvert. I wouldn't describe him as that, but I'm really curious, Dalton, just like, again, it's been a while since we've seen Jim Harbaugh at the NFL level, and who knows how much of what he did at Michigan is going to translate. But these are typically offenses that, especially in his 49ers days, very focused on running the ball, heavy formations, which right now I do think fits with the current way the league is going. Like, we're not as much of a, like, we're, things are still spread out, you know, 11 personnel, the whole thing, but we're seeing a lot of teams be very successful, like getting back to power run games. You know, think about the Rams did this year, you know, and focusing on tight ends and multiple tight ends and all that stuff. I think that, like, he actually, if there's a time for him to come back to the league, this is a pretty good one.
Harbaugh used to tell his players to not eat chicken because it's a nervous bird. He's since grown to love the animal and raises them himself. He used to test recruits with milk, judging whether they had non-fat or whole. I have other stories that aren't even, can't be said here, from a buddy that went to Stanford during his tenure behind the scenes. The guy is not, he's different, let's just say. Harbaugh is a different coach, but he gets the job done, and I loved him as a Niners coach back in the day, but again, it should be a fun dynamic between him and Herbert. You said it, because absolutely a different personalities there.
Well, I can't wait to hear those stories off air, number one, and break down some of this some more. Like I said, we're going to do a full coaching podcast. I'll just say on Callahan and Canales real quickly, I kind of like both of these hires. I know Callahan didn't call plays for the Bengals, but we've seen other guys. Sean McVay didn't call plays before becoming the Rams head coach. Mike McDaniel didn't call plays before becoming the Dolphins head coach. Like, it's not a, I think, a must. I think there can be some good collaboration there. And I like that Brian Callahan has, not strictly just Brian Callahan, but I like that the Bengals over time, you know, they changed the way they did things offensively under Joe Burrow and everything there. So I do like that about just his hire in particular. And Dave Canales, look, this was not going to be, they were not going to be able to land a big fish in Carolina, right? They were not going to be able to get one of the hot head coaching candidates because where that franchise is right now, I think he's very unproven. I you know, him and Bobby Slowick, I think it probably would have benefited them long-term to return to coordinator status. But I like a lot of what they did in Tampa last year offensively. I think that's actually a big loss for Tampa Bay, especially in the division. And hey, shout out to El Camino College. I mean, this guy was a special teams / tight end coach 2006-2008 at Elko before becoming going to USC and then obviously following Pete Carroll to Seattle. So he's been around Pete Carroll a long, long time from a program building perspective.
Tampa Bay is going to lose everyone, it seems like. Seemingly everyone on the roster is a free agent. So quickly before we move on from coaches, is Belichick is no longer the favorite to land in Atlanta? Is he not going to be a coach now? What's going on there?
I have no idea, man. I don't really know where he fits. I think it's got to, my theory on it is that I think the Falcons specifically and probably most teams are not in love with his plan for a staff. You know, I mean, is he going in there saying like, yeah, my offensive coordinator is Josh McDaniels and like, I'm bringing Matt Patricia because you could be Bill Belichick. It doesn't matter. Like, nobody's into that plan. People want a better vision than that. And I think that's probably got to be the thing that's spooking them at this point.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it just seemed like a lock after the couple interviews, but apparently something's not going right there. And also, I guess there's reports that Belichick wants to be in a quiet media market for whatever that's worth.
I mean, have you seen him talk to the media? Like, that part doesn't surprise me that he wants a quieter media market. Yeah, not going to L.A. or any jobs open in New York right now. Any of that does kind of make sense to me. But I don't think he can be that choosy. That's the problem. I think that Belichick probably is not as in demand as he probably thought he would be.
Defensive coordinator in Buffalo. What about that?
Dude, I think he would be like a badass defensive coordinator. He's not going to take a defensive coordinator. Do you think he would rather take a defensive coordinator job than take a year off? Just because I feel like he's like addicted to coaching at this point.
Yeah, I have no idea what Belichick thinks. I would not be surprised either way. Like, that wouldn't shock me if he were a D coordinator. But yeah, he's probably most likely at this point to take a year off and then return as a head coach. But I'm guessing.
Well, that's all we're doing this time of year with these head coaches. I mean, we don't even know who's going to be a good head coach and who's going to be a bad head coach. One last just connective tissue on the Dave Canales thing. He and new general manager, promoted from the assistant general manager spot, Dan Morgan, who was a linebacker for the Panthers. He's been, he has roots there. They spent time together in Seattle. Like I said, Dave Canales came from Seattle under Pete Carroll. He was a receivers coach there. He was a quarterback coach, obviously passing game coordinator. And then before taking the Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator job, Dan Morgan was in the scouting department there before then going to Buffalo. I think he was the director of player personnel in Buffalo before going back as the assistant GM with the Carolina Panthers. So I don't know if this is going to work out for Carolina, but I do like the background of Dave Morgan. And even if things have not been good in that building lately, and I like the back, I like a lot of what Dave Canales did from an offensive standpoint. So I think these are all pretty decent hires so far relative to expectations for what those teams could probably get. All right, let's waste no more time, Dalton. Let's get into the games this weekend. Starting with, let's talk AFC Championship. Kansas City Chiefs at Baltimore Ravens. We got a 3.5-point home favorite, the Ravens here. It's a 44.5-point over-under. Let's start with when the Chiefs have the ball, Dalton. In weeks 10 to 18, the Ravens allowed 4.99 yards per carry, the second most in the NFL, and they allowed the ninth most total rushing yards per game. They were actually 31st in rushing success rate allowed and 29th in rushing EPA allowed. Last week, the Ravens really incentivized the Texans to run the ball with the way that they just were aligning their defense. They were playing back, they were playing coverage. They're just saying, hey, Texans, come on, run on us. I think number one, because Bobby Slowick has been a little too conservative at times with the early down runs, and it's kind of actually set the offense back at times. Like, you know, CJ Stroud had to go in there and save us, but the Texans couldn't get it done. Devin Singletary had 22 rushing yards with a long run of 16 yards. He was extremely inefficient. That was an extremely inefficient way for the Ravens to, for the Texans to play against the Ravens, who overall have a great defense. This might be like one, I don't even know if I want to call it a weakness, but it might be something that they're willing to concede to opposing offenses. But my question to you, Dalton, I know we're getting this started with the Chiefs have the ball, and we're not talking about the pass game and Patrick Mahomes and everything, but can the Chiefs, can they afford to do that against the Chiefs, who have a really effective run game with Isaiah Pacheco, although they have a serious offensive line injury up there up front? So I'm curious to you, is this something that they can get away with doing 2 weeks in a row, where we see a different game plan from Mike McDonald and the boys in Baltimore?
Yeah, Casey's dealing with the all-pro guard, likely to miss this game. Pacheco is also banged up with his foot injury. Yeah, this Ravens defense is gonna certainly one of the best we've seen in recent memory. They've allowed an NFL low 5.9 yards per attempt, the fewest schedule-adjusted fantasy points to quarterbacks over the final 5 weeks of the year, but they're also the first team in league history to allow the fewest points per game while racking up the most takeaways and the most sacks. It's the only team to ever win that triple crown. And yeah, last week, quite impressive, shutting down Stroud throughout the entire game. The only touchdown they gave up was a special teams one. And so Stroud, I was, you know, really interested in playing from behind, even shutting him down there. So especially at home, I mean, this is a tough task for Mahomes, but obviously it surprised no one if he goes in there with the upset. So in DFS, you know, Mahomes is $4 higher his salary than my guy Brock Purdy at home against the Lions. So I suggested fading Mahomes here in this matchup. He has to deal with Mecole Hardman on the field. Just a historic performance last week. Jeez. Two touches, two fumbles. I mean, and one fumble, you know, the touchback fumble is the worst kind of fumble, really, in a way. So, yeah, he's going to deal with all these drops and whatnot. But Kelsey looks rejuvenated. Rashee Rice looks like a future star. I don't know if you would agree with that, but future fantasy star, I will say that.
Yeah.
This is going to be such a fun game. And I went back and forth as far as against the spread, because I could see the Ravens are the real deal and at home. He's Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, I think just from a spread perspective, and we'll pick this game, it's just like, all right, you're going to give me anything more than 3 points on the Chiefs. Right, I think I'll just take the Chiefs. We'll officially pick every game here, but I think just bringing it to Patrick Mahomes, I think there will be some temptation for people to look at his history against the Ravens. And he has a great history against the Ravens. He beat them 3 times in a row until in 2021, where the Ravens actually beat the Chiefs. But he's thrown for 377 yards, 374 yards, 385 yards, 343 yards. Even in that loss, 3 touchdowns, 11.1 yards per attempt. However, I don't think any of that is really instructive, Dalton, because this is a different defense than what the Ravens were rolling out there from 2018 to 2021. That was when Wink Martindale was the defensive coordinator for the Ravens. And the style of defense that Mike McDonald plays is so, so different than what Wink Martindale plays, who's very man coverage heavy. Like, you kind of just line up and play. He's going to blitz the hell out of you. Like, Mike McDonald doesn't do that. They're pretty creative with their pressure packages and stuff like that, but so much of it is based on disguise coverages, multiple coverages, being able to communicate really well, passing things off in zone, which to me does feel like a pretty rough matchup given the Chiefs' receiver room. But I do think Rashee Rice, like, is someone to point out here. Like, what are your expectations for Rashee Rice? I have a couple notes here, but I kind of want, what do you think after kind of like a quiet game for him last week in the divisional round?
Is this the Chiefs' sixth straight conference championship game?
Yep.
That's wild. And yet they actually have the lowest projected implied team total this week, for what it's worth, just over 20 points. Rice just... you look at his efficiency this season, yards per route run, historically good, and he's just developed a little bit, as far as I could tell, as a route runner throughout the season, running a little bit more routes. Mm-hmm. We could still don't see him down the field much, but his profile with Mahomes as his quarterback, I said he's a target of mine next year, and I'm going to rank him as a top 12 fantasy receiver, assuming they don't go out and get some, you know, major alpha or something. I mean, Kelce will be 35 years old, talk of retirement. I don't think that's, you know, I don't think a rookie would step in and take too many targets. So I just love the setup. There's actually an argument that the drop off between number one and all the other receivers on the roster may be the most for Rice. I mean, look how bad his competition is. And he has arguably the greatest quarterback of all time throwing to him. So that's my fantasy argument. And I don't love the fact that you are skeptical of his, you know, route tree.
I mean, number one, yeah, he is a target for you. People hopefully have read the piece that you put out yesterday about your seven, or was it yesterday or a couple days ago? Your seven targets for fantasy next year. I'm not going to spoil the whole list. You can go read it. But Dalton, I mean, incredible commitment. I had to look at it. As soon as I was clicking the article, I was like, I'm looking at the average age of these players, and 24.6, that is the average age of the seven players Dalton is targeting next year. Terry McLaurin at 28 years old, the old man.
Why
is the only
I
one.
Why did I add him in there? I know. When you said that, I really regretted that I had McLaurin in there at 28. I know. That was just, it's just such a perfect fit, you know, if they get Caleb Williams or Drake May now. But yeah, I regretted that one. But yeah, bunch of young guys. To no one's surprise.
To no one's surprise. I mean, that was Breece Hall's in there. Like I said, It's a very Dalton list, and number one, I love you for it, and I love the commitment
I didn't even think of it until you said that, by the way, too. I hope you realize that didn't once cross my mind until you tweeted that out, that I was picking only young people. That's so funny.
Dude, yeah. It's me.
Yeah.
It was the first thing I was thinking of when I was like, oh, Dalton's players I'm targeting. As soon as I open this, I'm going to look at every name. I'm going to pull a spreadsheet up and like, let me go name, average age, name, age, name, age, name, age. And so it did not disappoint. I mean, even just scrolling it, I was like, oh, Terry McLaurin. 28 years old. Yeah. Dalton's gone soft on me.
I know. It's bad. But yeah, I appreciate you, and I appreciate you promoting it, Harmon. You're the man. Appreciate you.
Well, I appreciate the Rashee Rice thoughts, because it's interesting. I'm looking it up today. Like, they've actually, the Ravens have allowed the 11th most catches to slot receivers and the 21st most to outside receivers. I think a lot of that is, and it's tough because they have these two great linebackers, right? Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen. You'd think like defending in the middle of the field, and overall they are actually really good at defending passes over the middle of the field. So maybe it's like these quick outbreaking routes to the flat. But again, it makes sense when you have a great pass rush, which the Ravens do, you can heat up quarterbacks. And I think that's going to be an issue for Mahomes in this game. Like, we spent a lot of time, especially on this show, talking about the receivers, and we should have, because it was a big problem. However, like, the offensive tackle play has been an issue all year long, creating pressure to the point that Mahomes has to scramble, creating pressure to the point that he has to step up in the pocket. And Joe Tooney missing this game is huge. Creed Humphrey is awesome, but Trey Smith, who's had a great playoff run, he's had an inconsistent season. Especially as a run blocker, he's struggled. So I think he's actually going to be a key player in this game. But if they're not able to push the ball vertically, Kansas City, and why the hell would they, against a really good defense that plays all this back end coverage, everything like that, is Rashee Rice not going to catch? I see a situation where he catches a lot of passes in this game because the Ravens play a bunch of zone. He's great at beating zone coverage. That's the thing where Dalton, if Rashee Rice is going to reach the expectations that you and many other people are going to have for him, he has to become, unless he develops a ton as an outside route runner and he's going to win vertically, he has to become like a very good, great to elite zone beating receiver. And the thing that's encouraging for me is that he did show a lot of signs that he can be that player. He's definitely not in the elite category yet, but he, from like a reception perception standpoint, was testing at kind of like a good to very good level. And if that continues to develop, he can hit these expectations that you have next year. But I think he's going to be a critical player in this matchup.
Jacob Gibbs tweeted, among 74 receivers with 350 plus routes run, Rice had the lowest average depth of target. And when you compare that to the other people in the top 12 in yards per route run, it's just comical. Ayuk had averaged 14 yards and Rice was less under 5. So he is doing this crazy top 12 yards per route run while getting the lowest, you know, air yards. So that's interesting. Yeah. I don't know what to make of that other than the guy seems talented. He's third, I think, in yards after the catch this season.
Yeah, he's a baller after the catch. That's what you make out of it.
But maybe in this game, to avoid the pass rush and over the middle, there will be these, you know, a lot of shorter passes to Rice. But I like him this week, temporary expectations in the matchup. But in DFS with few alternatives, absolutely, you could use him. But for next year, I'm going to be among the highest rankers of him.
I think in terms of the yards per route run, like rookie seasons, you know, because I talked about this a lot, like when you look back at the guys that like are historic yards per route run rookie finishers, the one screaming red flag is, and I don't even know where Rice would fall on this list, but the one like screaming red flag was Christian Watson. Mm-hmm. Like he does not have the skill set of guys like Olave or Wilson or previously like Chase and Jefferson and Odell Beckham.
Puka,
and he's going to be up there like he doesn't fit in. Like he doesn't fit in this fluke category that I'm talking about. Like there was a lot of not flukiness in Christian Watson's rookie season, but there was a lot of unsustainable, like big downfield plays. He had, I think, the weakest skill set. And I think that Rashee Rice is not at that level. He's a couple levels up. I don't think he's at the level of Puka or, you know, Odell Beckham or any of these guys. By the way, the only sad thing, the only thing that was disappointing and sad about Puka Nacua's rookie season is how often I had to be reminded of Odell Beckham's rookie season. And just like, I will, because of all of the historical lists and the metrics and stuff like that, I always just have to shed one tear because my God, that guy was so good as a rookie. He should be having like a long extended career, but injuries suck.
Ran seven routes last week, Beckham.
I know. We'll get to the Ravens here in just a second, but last thing just on the Chiefs, with all this Rashee Rice talk, BetMGM currently has his receiving yard or receiving receptions prop at 6.5 at +115. I am taking the over on that because of what we were just talking about, like that potential matchup, zone coverage underneath, everything with Rashee Rice there. All right, let's talk when the Ravens have the ball. Lamar Jackson had the third best passer rating this season among quarterbacks who played 10 plus games when throwing out of 12 personnel. Only your boy Brock Purdy and Joe Burrow / Jake Browning were better, which I think is interesting because we don't think of them as like, ooh, these great tight end plays, but maybe another feather in the cap of Brian Callahan and the boys who we talked about earlier. He actually only had 3 dropbacks out of 12 personnel against the Texans in the divisional round, did Lamar Jackson, but you'd imagine that's going to go up because it sounds like Mark Andrews is going to play. And Dalton, I think it would be irresponsible of Todd Monken, who I don't think is an irresponsible offensive coordinator, I think it'd be irresponsible to not have a ton of 12 personnel packages where Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely are both on the field. Cause he's got like Likely is clearly a baller and Mark Andrews is obviously one of the best players in the position. It is worth noting, however, though, that the Chiefs were a top 7 defense in allowing production to tight ends in the regular season. They're one of the top 7 best defenses at limiting tight end production in the regular season.
Agreed. Likely and Andrews should both see the field plenty here. I mean, Andrews is probably going to be limited in his return, but I bet you he's targeted heavily when he is out there, especially in the red zone. Likely is a baller, seemingly makes a big play downfield every game. And maybe Beckham isn't as healthy as we all hoped, saving him for the playoffs after last week seeing him just get 20 snaps. So, I mean, Aguilar is even more involved. So, Bateman, by the way, do you think we can write off this year with his injury and hopefully there's a sliver of hope for next year? Yes or no?
I was just on Chris Harris's podcast this morning. He was giving me crap for even holding out any enthusiasm for Rashad Bateman. But I do think we can. And look, he definitely had some unreliable moments this year, some bad drops, some mistakes and stuff like that. But, you know, I read a good article in The Athletic, Jeff Zeribek did on him, on Rashad Bateman, and just like how much it meant to him to like that he's still playing right now. You know, he did miss a game at one point during the season, but he overcame a lot, not just off the field or not just, you know, medically off the field, but personally off the field this year. He was going through a lot that people like didn't really know about. And just he in that article, too, he said, I don't know if you read this or saw it at all. Bateman said that when he showed up to camp in July, he thought he wasn't even going to be able to play this season. Like that's how far back his rehab had. That's how far back he was in his rehab from his foot injury that occurred last year. And I do think that the more Bateman played, the more that he looked competent and comfortable and confident as a route runner and a separator. I still think like maybe the downfield juice never comes back for him. But like we talk about with Michael Gallup, like that guy's confidence has clearly been shot after his ACL injury and coming back a little too soon from it. The fact that Bateman seems to still have confidence and the team, Harbaugh, Lamar, all these guys, Eric DaCosta, like talk very confidently about Bateman, I think is a good sign for his future if you're holding out any hope. I will go down with the ship on Bateman. Maybe the ceiling expectations I had for him will never be reached. Maybe he never becomes like a fantasy star, but I do think that he could be a good, productive NFL player down the line here.
Good to hear. I share that opinion. I hope it's true because it does sound, if you look a little bit more into it, that this year just really was just ruined by an injury he couldn't recover from. Kansas City's defense, I'm not sure if it still holds true after last week, but they had been allowing the fewest yards per play this year when totally healthy. This is arguably the best defense Mahomes has had on his side. But man, Lamar has got 9.3 yards per attempt at home this season, ran for 100 plus yards and 2 touchdowns for what it's worth when these teams met week 2 in 2021. KC blitzed 44.4% of the time during that game. That's why he countered with so much running. But the Chiefs have a much better defense this week. Both teams are basically borderline run funnels. So this could be a lower scoring game with two of the best defenses in the league facing two of the best quarterbacks in the league. So, I mean, what's not to like?
I definitely see this as a low scoring game. I mean, the total's what, 44.5 right now as we tape this.
Yep.
I think I'll take the under on that one. I think it'll be a great game. I think great performance by both of these quarterbacks is absolutely within the range of outcomes here, but I think it's going to be like a very good back and forth kind of lower scoring game. You mentioned those, both these defenses are great. We gave all the flowers to Baltimore at the beginning of it, and they deserve it. I think they have been an elite tier defense, like one of the best. I mean, honestly, like this has been a great team. I know that sounds stupid to say, like AFC, their number one seed, all that, but like I think we are not giving credit to how well-rounded and how this has kind of been a historic team, honestly, with how efficient they've been on offense, how effective they've been on defense. Their quarterback is going to win MVP most likely. And like they've shellacked good teams this year. Like that's another impressive thing in their resume this year.
Yeah. I think I set a record for most double digit wins over winning teams this season. And John Daigle tweeted, it's been a full 2 months since a wide receiver reached 90 receiving yards against the Chiefs, Devonta Smith in week 11. I mean, that's some dominant defense there. Man, this should be good. Yes.
Yeah. Baltimore is set up extremely well. I think defensively, obviously it's crazy. Like, yeah, they destroyed Detroit. They destroyed the 49ers, the team the other side, the NFC championship game. That's how good this team has been this year. And they could lose this game to Patrick Mahomes because Patrick Mahomes is just that good. Man, now that I'm talking about it, though, we can go ahead and pick this game and then move on to the next one here. Now that we're just looking at how good Baltimore has been and they've destroyed these good teams and the enthusiasm I have for the tight ends, we didn't even talk about Zay Flowers, who I don't know if he's going to have a monster game here, but I love Zay Flowers, man. He's so good. Justice Hill, who led the running backs in snaps last week, he had a really nice performance, I think, against Houston. And the way Lamar handled the blitz, now I'm kind of thinking maybe I'm talking myself into picking the Ravens. I think the Ravens win this game. Am I a coward, though? Like with the spread, like I'm just thinking 3.5 points. So just take Mahomes with 3.5 points. But I don't know, man. Where are you going?
If you're a coward, I'm joining you. It's just more than a... I wouldn't really bet this. The lines are tight. There's only two games to pick from. But yes, I would take the more than a field goal and Patrick Mahomes. And don't get me wrong, the Niners could absolutely lose to the Lions, even lucky to be playing this week. But there is kind of a funny debate among Niner fans right now being like, there's on one hand, here's a team that is historically, he just said, you know, beat everything and then just dominated the Niners in San Francisco, or the final score was at least a domination there. But even also that, having said all that, it's like, ooh, but Patrick Mahomes, you know, it's like, who? I mean, I don't know which, I pick your poison there. I mean, that, boy, these are two very legit AFC team. Either one is going to be a fine representative out of that conference.
All right. So there you have it for Chiefs, Ravens. After the break, we dive into Lions, 49ers. All right, so let's move on and talk about your Niners here. Detroit Lions at San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers, as we record this right now, are 7-point favorites. Over-under is 51. I think this game, or 51.5 right now, actually. I think this game is going to get high scoring on the flip side of it. Let's talk about the Lions when they have the ball first. Jared Goff had the second most yards throwing over the middle of the field this season. He actually led the NFL in passing touchdowns over the middle of the field, this deep and short, with 11. The 49ers, however, have allowed the third fewest yards per target on middle of the field throws and the second lowest passer rating. They're kind of middle of the road in terms of allowing yak for whatever that's worth over the middle of the field. But if you just think about it, man, the Lions, they're throwing to their tight end. They're throwing to Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, Jared Goff has just always been a great middle-of-the-field passer, but you've got Fred Warner. I mean, just that matchup to me, Dalton, I think is going to tell the story for when the Lions have the ball and when the 49ers are on defense. Like, Fred Warner, is he going to come up with some big plays here? You know, he's a great coverage linebacker. The Niners' defense from a run game perspective has been a little shaky, but that, to me, seems like where your eyeball should be when the Lions have the ball, is like, what is Fred Warner doing and can they have their usual success throwing over the middle of the field?
Yeah, I saw those numbers over the middle with the Niners D, but at the same time, they've definitely struggled at times against the slot this year. And Amon-Ra St. Brown runs about more than 50% of his routes there. He didn't have any dramatic home road splits either, by the way. Averaged 86 yards on the road, but it scored 7 of his 10 touchdowns away from home this season. And Goff, you know, road golf is definitely a drop off, especially outdoors. But the weather, you know, both quarterbacks with their tiny hands struggling in the rain. Hopefully that won't be an issue for me this week, man. Definitely sat through some rain last week. But the Lions will absolutely attempt to establish the run this game. But both teams are borderline pass funnels. Certainly the Lions are. The Niners, I believe, allowed the fewest rush attempts against them this year. A lot of that's game flow, not necessarily have this dominant run D. You know, it can be beatable at times, but so game script's going to play a big part of how Detroit's run pass ratio goes. And then, you know, I mean, the Lions have an awesome run D. So maybe the Niners end up having to pass a lot. So that could be fun, a passing back and forth, over under above 50. Hopefully we see, that'd be fun to see a shootout here. I think that's possible, but at the same time, the Lions also are among the leaders in pressure rate, and the Niners do not have great pass protection. So there's a lot of chess pieces here. The Lions have an awesome offensive line, but Jonah Jackson's beat up. So is Ragnow. So you know, Bosa hasn't had a sack in his last 4 playoff games, I believe. So yeah, this should be a fun one. The Lions. Yeah,
how are you feeling about that Niners pass rush right now? Like, there was a lot of chirping about Chase Young after the Packers game. You know, the Lions, like you mentioned, their offensive line has some injuries right now. Jonah Jackson, Frank Ragnow, one of the best centers in the league. He's definitely going to play. He finished the game last week, but Jackson might miss this game. I think that, I mean, look, these are two quarterbacks. Every quarterback is dramatically affected by pressure. We know that. But these are two quarterbacks that if you can heat them up, especially, like, I think Purdy actually is probably better than Goff in creation mode. And again, we'll talk about the Niners in a sec. But how are you feeling about this 49ers pass rush right now, which I think has come in a little underwhelming this season?
I saw one stat that despite the strong offensive line, the Lions allow the 10th highest pressure rate for whatever that is worth. But yeah, Chase Young didn't really show up. Niners fans are definitely frustrated with him. Armstead looked pretty good in his return. Yeah. And Bosa's still getting the pressure. Sacks, you know, not a perfect stat. So, It's going to be a big part of this game. The Green Bay Packers offensive line borderline played really well. I wouldn't say they dominated, but really, really held their own last week. And man, I was rightfully scared of that Green Bay team. I would have picked them to win in Detroit, possibly. That is an awesome, awesome Packers team. So young. Do you know, realize that their defense had played 89 snaps the week before traveling, you know, across the country and back against the Cowboys and still put up that fight? Joe Barry was just fired. But I don't know. I was thoroughly impressed with the Packers last week. And the Niners got a wake-up call. And I'll talk about Deebo on off the field when we get to the Niners part. But the Lions are going to try to run it. Jahmyr Gibbs is just the craziest producer. Man, if there wasn't a Montgomery problem for fantasy, I mean, he'd be right, you know, argument right there for pick number two or three among the running backs. Yeah, Goff, the elements will be fine. He's returning home, went to Cal. I personally expect this to be a competitive game.
So do I. The 49ers are, in the regular season, they were 26th in EPA per rush allowed, and they were 24th in rushing success rate allowed. Like, I'm sure I've mentioned that stat all year long with the Niners defense, but it has been an issue. Dude, Jahmyr Gibbs is so good.
So good.
So many people have compared it. I think I mentioned Scott Bischoff from Football Guys. It was the first person I saw at least say that, like, Jamal Charles was the player comp on Twitter. And then people have mentioned other folks that had made that comparison too. And like, I really do see it. I mean, I guess that means David Montgomery is going to play the role of Thomas Jones for the Chiefs for a long time, where he was just kind of that touchdown vulture and whatever. But damn, dude, I mean, I think Jahmyr Gibbs is awesome. And if the 49ers, who I think have played more aggressive on defense this year, talking about like from a tendency standpoint, not like nobody could say they were ever anything but like a super flying around fast aggressive defense under D'Amico Ryans. But I think tendency wise, they've been a little bit more aggressive this year. Can Jahmyr Gibbs, like, can he make them pay, get out in space, make plays over the middle of the field? I think, again, it comes back to that middle of the field to me. Like, can they get Amon-Ra St. Brown cooking? Can we get Jahmyr Gibbs, who hasn't even really been fully unlocked as a receiver yet? Can we get him unlocked as a receiver here on some blitz beaters and stuff like that? He's going to be another critical player here for the Lions.
I know the Niners are concerned about these tosses that killed him last week. By the way, Aaron Jones, arguably the best player in the field last week. Nice. Just what a monster, man. Just producing extra yards. First opponent to rush for 100 yards against the Niners in 51 games last week. I know he got a long run, but he was just impressive on every tackle. He was hard to bring down, man. Aaron Jones is the man. It's too bad he's on the downside of his career. You know, he's a tough guy to go after in fantasy, but what a player when healthy.
Yeah, he's awesome. Those toss plays are a good call out. It does require your receivers to really block. And man, my guy Dontayvion Wicks blocking his ass off in that game. He was awesome. We'll see. Look, can Jameson Williams do that? Can Josh Reynolds? Certainly, maybe he can do that. And obviously, Amon-Ra St. Brown is a good. He likes to get gritty and get dirty in the run game as well. So I can see that. All right, let's talk about your Niners when they have the ball. Number one, you're gonna be at this game, right?
Yeah, I'll be there. Yep. Yep. Hopefully in better weather this time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, my God. Californians can't deal with all that weather. I mean, the rain.
Yeah, it actually wasn't even that bad. It wasn't cold at all. We'll see. That was the loudest. The interception was the loudest I've ever heard Levi's Stadium. Personally, it was one of its biggest moments there. But it was impressive. Man, I still shot. How did that happen, Harmon? That was misery for me for 58 minutes. I didn't have any fun sitting at that game at all. Like, I thought they were going to lose for sure. And just I still don't understand how they won that game.
Purdy made it happen at the end, man. I mean. It's, I don't know, the Purdy discourse is pretty crazy. But all right, let's talk about when the 49ers have the ball. The Detroit Lions played man coverage at the 12th highest rate this season, and they allowed the third most production per dropback in man coverage, according to Fantasy Points data. Brock Purdy, among quarterbacks, had the highest yards per attempt and passer rating when facing man coverage in the regular season. Our guy, Brandon Ayuk, of course, averages a team high 2.27 targets per route run against man coverage. He's their man coverage beater. And man, number one receivers have shredded the Lions this season. Obviously, Mike Evans went crazy on them in the divisional round, which was to be expected. Feels like they're going to really need a big Ayuk game here, because obviously Deebo Samuel, whether he plays or not, is not going to be anywhere close to 100%. Kyle Shanahan basically said this is going to be a pain tolerance type of injury.
The last six number one receivers to face the Lions have all topped at least 140 yards and scored. The Lions played the third most man over the last six games, Dwayne McFarland notes, and that's always been Ayuk's specialty is against man. So I love the matchup here. It's a total pass funnel opponent here. The Lions had really shut down the run down the stretch, and their secondary has been the team's weak spot. And this is surprising, but not only did McFarland point out in his article, there's other tweets out there saying that Deebo Samuel off the field, Purdy, you know, still ranked first in YPA and in success rate. His YPA actually increased compared to when Deebo was on the field. Now, as a team, their yards per play, I think, dropped. So I don't know what to make of that, but I'm going to expect Deebo to try to play, but at best, he'll be compromised. I mean, he might not even play. It doesn't sound great. Thursday's practice will tell a lot. But Ayuk has to step up like last week. I know he's our guy. Those two catches, he doesn't make either one. Maybe they don't win the game. The low throw by Purdy on the crossing route, we had to go down to his toes. And then the diving catch on third, and both would have been fourth downs if he doesn't make the next play, if he doesn't make those awesome catches. So, and then Kittle is obviously going to need to step up, and I definitely recommend him in DFS. You could even use two tight ends if you wanted to, but Kittle at $23 salary in Yahoo. Their Lions are seeding more than 370 passing yards over the last five games. And Kittle has averaged more than 20 fantasy points per game with Brock Purdy and without Deebo Samuel. So, they may have to rely on them more because of this Lions run D.
Felt like last week that Deebo was just so critical to what they planned on doing in that game. You know, 100%. The way that, like, I mean, Ray McLeod and, like, I've never seen Kyle. Did you see the clip of Kyle Shanahan losing his mind at the one route that people are saying, like, Ray McLeod ran the wrong route. I'll have to find it and send it to you. But yeah,
I know Jennings, third and Jennings got a carry. That was a mistake.
Right.
That was supposed to be Deebo. Yeah, that was
even
that
Chris
was
Conley,
mistake.
Like you could tell, was in it, like used in some of the Deebo ways. It's like, yeah. I mean, dude, these guys are. Yeah. I think Juwan Jennings is actually a really nice role player for you guys. But like,
What a pass,
Conley and like McLeod. Like these guys are, they're not.
Conley's just a blocker. He's a blocker.
Exactly. Yeah. They're not Deebo Samuel. Like they shouldn't be in that role. They shouldn't be doing Deebo Samuel things here. But it was clear, like they just kind of like these are the plays we were running. They like the Purdy had him on the wristband. That was like basically what that was what Shanahan said. Like, yeah, he shouldn't have had a carry in that situation, but like we were just going off, you know, going off the wristband in that situation. Like it happens. I feel like they'll be better prepared for all right, now we're gonna shred man coverage. We're gonna, you know, have Ayuk out here at the boundary. You know, Kittle, obviously, like I'd take Kittle in man coverage against any of these linebackers or even Brian Branch is a good player. I mean, Kittle's just so explosive. Probably, I mean, shoot, that throw that Purdy delivered to Kittle on the touchdown, probably one of the better, I mean, certainly one of his better throws in that game, but one of the better throws anybody made the last weekend. So I do think there's a clear matchup advantage there. And I mean, I think that if they're this game plan, even if they're not going to come in and establish the run with CMC, I think having him unlocked as a receiver would probably be pretty critical to this game plan as well.
Yeah. Also, Purdy's throw, was it over that safety to Jennings on third down? Was this so nice? But he certainly had his misses as well. It's a great point I should have brought up that Deebo being lost mid-game was a major issue. I mean, Shanahan even admitted he was a big part of the game plan. So even this week, if we get a limited or no Deebo, the difference will be the game plan. At least we'll prepare for that. But I could see this one being high scoring because the Niners do have weaknesses on defense and this Lions secondary has really, you know, been a problem. So even if McCaffrey's used more as a receiver, just as you mentioned, and you're still paying up for him in DFS this week, last week, a ho-hum, two more touchdowns. And he's this week, so limited options.
So you said that the offense's yards per play goes down significantly without Samuel, but the, yeah. But the yards per attempt goes up with
Purdy's. That, so I've seen, I don't know how true that those seem conflicting, but maybe so the running game gets that much better. I mean, maybe, or one could be untrue. Definitely not sure on that one. But I know in general, Purdy's stats have not dropped off a cliff, but I don't know. I'd want to look into that more.
I was just thinking, I'm looking this up kind of on the fly. Yeah. I mean, his just in the three games without Debo this year, 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. And count, I'm counting there. No, I'm not counting in the playoffs, just the regular season. So week 6, 7, 8, when Debo left after just 1 target, 9 snaps against the Cleveland Browns. 3 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, but 8.66 yards per attempt. His ADOT is 9.1 when in those three games, which maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I certainly would say it's not going to help Brock Purdy if Debo Samuel misses this game. So whatever the noise is, I don't know the matchups. I know they were losing the games without Debo, right? Those are the games right. The Niners were losing,
three,
so it can't.
Yep, yeah. three straight losses. Yeah, so his average depth of target, 9.1. The rest of the season and the playoff game average is 8.4. So I think he's just those like pop passes and stuff like that, you know, the short dump offs to Debo, he's probably pushing the ball downfield more, which is going to, you know, boost the yards per attempt as long as you're not a complete like nightmare as a deep passer, which Purdy is not. So I think that's probably the explanation there. So
provide D-backs more opportunities to hopefully drop interceptions. Purdy 11.0. Here I do know these stats. Purdy 11.0 YPA, averaged 310 passing yards and scored 14 touchdowns over 7 home games this year. And the forecast is calling for dry skies, crucially here, because obviously the rain played a part last week, and maybe rust, and maybe who knows what else, but it certainly was a factor because that's been a theme with him. We saw it in Cleveland as well this year. So that is nice for Purdy's outlook, at least, that it's calling for clear skies. And then, yeah, so other than that, man, I don't, Purdy, do you have thoughts? You're just tired of talking about him in the discourse, because I know that he's been getting quite a bit of flack after that performance.
I mean, yeah, I'm just tired of like the extremism. I'm tired of on both sides. Like I'm a Purdy centrist. I've actually always been relatively pro Purdy. It's probably like I really hate to say it in like political terms, but I really think it's like there is so much extremism with the Purdy stuff. It is almost like a political issue. Like some people have like literally Purdy derangement syndrome. Like they just can't give him any credit when he does good stuff. And like his last game was perfect because anybody that's anti-Purdy came out with a large sample to plenty of things to levy against him. But then the people that are so pro Purdy, like, oh, he's Joe Montana or whatever, they have the final drive. So it was like a perfect mix of it. And I guess like what I should probably just do from my own personal standpoint is realize, again, just like political issues, it's probably a very vocal minority that's making it like an exhausting round of discourse here. But like, why can't we just all say, he's a very, very good quarterback, which he clearly is. He's perfect for this offense, the offense that he plays in. So I don't care what he would look like on the Ravens offense, or whoa, what would we do if him and Patrick Mahomes switched places? I don't care. They're never going to switch places. Like, so what does it matter? I mean, I guess if you're ranking quarterbacks like one, this is what's so annoying about quarterback discourse, Dalton, is it's like we always got to compare one guy to the other. Like, let's just assess what Purdy is. And he's clearly good. He's clearly good in this situation, but he's not one of the 5 best quarterbacks in the NFL. He's not an elite quarterback. Like, fine. Okay. But, and like, also, he's in his second season, bro. I mean, I know I don't have to tell you this, but he's in his second season. Like, we got a long way to go for him to see more things and grow mentally and all this type of stuff. I don't know. I just like, let's just ditch all the extremism narratives with Purdy is where I'm at.
Yeah. David Lombardi's definitely been comparing him to Montana this week, but at least Harmon, one of your co-hosts on podcast, is a Purdy centrist like myself. At least you have that, you know, not the other side of the spectrum. I've never gone too far the other way. But no, that was a tougher game to watch there. He was really inaccurate there. And after that Ravens game, I'm just having, I don't know. I've been the last two games I've watched him, it's been not exactly the highest of accuracy. So talking about coaches is so tiresome, and I get it. I don't even want to get too much into this, but isn't it wild that guys like Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay are so bad in games? I know it's tiresome. I get it, but there's like it's hundreds of millions of dollars are involved, and these guys don't McVay literally hasn't learned the difference between taking a timeout before or after the 2-minute warning. I mean, what? Like, I mean, that is That's insane. Kyle Shanahan giving away a final possession the first half of that game. I know he said, I guess he tried to go some more downfield, but I mean, really settling for a 52-yard field goal in that weather with that kicker is just so bizarre. They got the ball. In fairness, the Packers didn't get the ball back either. And I was going nuts that he punts the ball from the 40-yard line. You know, do you realize that punt from the 40-yard line might have saved their season? I mean, do you realize that the Packers had a 70-yard drive after that punt and then missed a field goal? So everyone's screaming, you should go for the 40. Of course, maybe the play calls are different, but they drove 60 yards after that. So it's funny. I was just so mad at him. And in hindsight, I'm like, wait a minute. Maybe that conservative call actually helped them win. But the in-game management is so crazy to me that these guys can be so the best, the top of their profession in all these other areas and laughably, comically bad, clueless in other areas.
I'm really glad you brought this up because, one, I wanted to give a shout out to Sheil Kapadia. I saw a video that he posted on his Twitter feed, like ranting against Kyle Shanahan specifically and like about the clock management stuff. And it just dawned on me watching it. I'm like, you know who's great with like the fourth down decision making and the in-game management stuff is Dan Campbell.
Oh, they have such a coaching advantage once this game kicks off. It's a crime.
Yeah, because I mean they have a great offensive designer too.
As far as in-game management, I should say. Yeah. Sorry, the timeouts and all the small stuff. To be clear, the going for it on fourth down or punting, those decisions.
I feel like if the 49ers lose this game, we are definitely going to be talking about. And you have graciously agreed to do the recap pod.
Reluctantly, that has the makings of a disaster Monday morning too. Yeah, yeah.
In a lot of ways, I'm actually because of that. Like, I can't decide. Lions. Am I rooting for the Lions? No, or am I rooting, dude? I don't like uncomfortable situations, and I don't like my friends to be sad. And I consider you a friend. I don't want to come on this show and have you be upset like Monday morning. So I actually can't decide if like, you know what, the content's going to be pretty good if Dalton's like nice and pissed off and salty. And maybe honestly, I don't even have to come up with any notes. I just be like, all right, Dalton, 49ers lose. Let it rip. And I don't know, maybe you say three words or maybe you talk for 30 minutes. I don't know. But I think if that does happen, we're definitely going to be talking about a huge mismatch in terms of, yeah, Dan Campbell managed the situation beautifully and Kyle Shanahan did not.
You share my wife's predicament, Harmon. You see, on one hand, she's a diehard Niners fan, follows them more than I do, admittedly. On the other, she'd prefer I don't spend money to go on a Super Bowl ticket as well. So she's a little bit conflicted as well. But we have to win one more game to even have that option.
Thank God Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas is indoors, buddy. You don't have to worry about that rain with your boy Brock Purdy. Okay. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up though, because that is a big deal in this game. Like Shanahan, somebody has got to just grab him by the shirt and just be like, yo, bro, like shout out to Sheil, because he like in that video that I saw said it best. Like, it's fine if you want to lean conservative, but like you have the best offense in the league. You've been building this particular offense for years and you drop this quarterback into it and this quarterback has made it sing more than any other quarterback. Like, this is when you should be your most aggressive. Like, I actually think John Harbaugh, people give him criticism for being more conservative in whatever this year. Well, because he has a great defense that isn't like it when he would have to be aggressive earlier, because even though they had great defense in Baltimore, bring it all the way back to what I said earlier about Mahomes, they had this like man coverage, blitz heavy defense is sort of live by the sword, die by the sword defense. So on offense, you can be more aggressive to complement that. So, hey, in a bad situation, you don't leave your aggressive defense exposed and get thrown over the top when Wink Martindale's your defensive coordinator. Now they have this great defense that specializes in coverage and really shutting teams down. You can be more conservative because you can trust your defense. Like, this is a situation where Shanahan should be coaching aggressively, but it is crazy, man. And I think these guys, like McVay and obviously Shanahan, they've just been around old school football so long. Like, they don't have it ingrained into their DNA like some of the younger guys do. I don't know, man. It is it's wild. It's got to be frustrating as a fan.
And I went off on a little mini rant about coaches, and I even mentioned Todd Bowles last week, not calling the timeout and forcing him to kick a 48-yard field goal. It would have been a one possession game. Did they missed it? I mean, that's crazy. I don't know. It's wild that they could be again, running, you know, hundreds of million dollars organizations and decisions, and then just completely careless in these crucial situations in the middle of games.
Yeah. Colin brings up a good point in the chat. Is it maybe like these guys that are CEO head coaches, like a Dan Campbell, you know, he's not involved in play calling. He's not involved in, you know, and maybe these guys are more Harbaugh was a CEO type of head. He's a CEO type of head coach. Mike Vrabel was great about this stuff. And like knowing the rules and little tweaks like that when he was a Titans coach, and he
Vrabel and
Sam
Shanahan
caller.
Are calling plays. Meanwhile, I'm sorry, McVay and Shanahan, meanwhile,
exactly.
Are too busy. Yeah.
They're too busy calling plays. It's just crazy though. They're offensive play callers and they have good offenses. Like, why wouldn't you want to be like, you know what? These guys have an ego, and I think that's part of it too. By the way, it's an ego thing. Like, this is what I've always known. This is what we do. Whatever. But you'd think like, oh my God, you know what would satisfy your ego if you go for it on fourth down, or you have this crazy like 2-point thing, and then you know what we're all doing? We're all giving praise to your offense. I don't know, man. It's something we don't talk about much with Shanahan, at least on like this show. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I've been thinking all week about that mismatch between Dan Campbell and Kyle Shanahan in this regard.
Yeah, I know it's part of the reason I'll take the points. It's open at 6.5, jumped up to 7. Niners are not playing their best football right now, and the Lions have the slight advantage in that area. And you know, banged up or no Debo, I think does matter too. So I hope I'm wrong, but I would take the points here.
God, I really don't have a good feel for this game, other than it's going to be high scoring. I would definitely, we'll talk about prop bets and bets and DFS and stuff here in a minute, but like, I think my favorite thing here is to not bet the line and just take, not bet the spread and just take the over, which is probably how I would bet this game. I think if having to pick against spread though, like, yeah. Man, I think I'll take Niners -7. I feel good that they can actually come out here, score a lot of points, and that their defense has enough mismatches in their favor over Goff and being able to pressure him and stuff like that. So I'll take Niners -7 just to be different.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the proper jinx.
You're welcome. All right. Any favorite bets, DFS plays, props, whatever here before we get out of here, man?
Like I said, the lines are tight. I've liked the last couple weeks more, but I would take the 3.5 with the Chiefs there. If you did want to bet aside this week for DFS, I think it's made a theme here with a tight end minimum $10 salary this week in Yahoo is Mark Andrews, who is looking likely to return. He won't see a full allotment of snaps, but I do think he will be targeted when on the field. As mentioned, Kansas City has been shutting down receivers, hasn't allowed 90 yards since week 11. But over the middle, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of Andrews. And again, the DFS minimum.
From a prop bet perspective, I mentioned Rashee Rice over 6.5 catches at plus odds. I'll take that. A little bit banged up last week, but again, I think he matches up well with this zone heavy defense. And then in the 49ers game, like, it's a big number, Brandon Ayuk, over 81.5 receiving yards, but I'll take the over, and I think it's going to actually go up. Like, if we get news that Debo's not going to play, or he's going to be limited, as we mentioned, like, that number is going to go up. And the more I think about it, the more I actually like, even though, again, he hasn't been fully unlocked as a receiver, Jahmyr Gibbs, 21.5 receiving yards. I'll take the over on that one as well.
Our guy Ayuk, for what it's worth, the most receiving yards in NFL history for someone with fewer than 110 targets this year, at home, averaged 105 receiving yards per game compared to 67 on the road. So yeah, he and Purdy in this matchup, and with a banged up Debo, and look at the last 5 games, what number one receivers have gone against the Lions. Yeah, that seems like a smash. Agreed.
All right, buddy. This is it. AFC, NFC championship games, man. I think this Sunday is going to be a great slate of football. I can't wait to watch it. And I do wish you luck. I do wish you luck there Sunday against the Detroit Lions. 6:40 p.m. Eastern, baby. Dalton, I'm be here thinking of you the whole time.
I appreciate it. And you'll get to see me in my misery or my happiness Monday morning. First thing, looking forward to that. Or maybe I won't be looking forward to that. But yeah, you know, the Niners are probably tiresome. They've been to, you know, a few conference championships, but you realize they haven't won the Super Bowl since 94. I mean, it's been a lot of close ones, but they I'm coming in with with my guard up, man. After that last game, I fully expect the Lions to show up and put up a huge, huge fight.
I'm just gonna say, Dalton, if you are too brokenhearted, you can call out fake sick. You know, you had some sickness.
I avoided food at Levi's Stadium after last food poisoning. I'll bring that one back. And if I don't show up, I had eaten some food there. But no, man, I'll be there. I'll be here Monday morning, rain or shine.
Well, in that case, I'm very curious. Listeners, you can let us know. You can tweet at us. Let us know. What are you rooting for? Are you rooting for sad Dalton? Or are you rooting for happy Dalton? I will be rooting for an excited, enthusiastic Dalton Del Don on Sunday morning. Not because I don't want to root for the Lions. I think any of these four teams winning a Super Bowl, I'm actually super cool with any of it. Any matchup in the Super Bowl, it sounds good to me. But simply for my buddy's sake and the peace and comfort of this show, I would like Dalton to show up happy on
I appreciate
Monday
you.
Morning.
The whole world's rooting for the Lions. They're America's team this weekend, it feels like.
All right, well, you know, that at least does make sense. Probably not in the rest of the Midwest, though. I don't think Wisconsin and Minnesota and I don't know that they're all that jacked up. But Chicago, all that jacked up to see the Lions here. But all right, that's going to do it for us. Again, as Dalton mentioned, he is hopefully, most likely, I'll say 99.9%, joining me on Monday morning to break down these two games, the reaction from it. Where do the losers go from here? We give an early preview of Super Bowl 58. I mean, my God, this time of the year is so awesome. I can't wait for these two games. Can't wait for that show. Until then, we're out.